Okay, cool. We're back. Welcome back to Evil Thespian. We are here with Christian Flynn. They are a playwright and performer in New York City, and they are also the creator of Game Piece, which is what we are here to talk about today, amongst other topics. They are also the artistic director of The Spade. If it's worth mentioning, Christian has been on my show before with The Spade, and we love a return guest. So, Christian, welcome back.
Oh, it's great to be back. Yes. I feel like I'm in Chicago already.
I know. And, it's the sun just came out and it's no longer very depressing outside. So
I know it's truly all seasons at once.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy over here right now, because it's kind of that a season where, you know, it's all basically winter's over, spring is like kind of over too, but it's not
trying,
warm.
Yeah,
it's trying. It's really frustrating though, because it's nice outside, but it's still kind of cold. So, but anyway, how are you?
I'm good.
Yeah, a lot of things going on for you right now.
Yeah, I am really busy. This week, obviously, we're getting ready for Game Piece on Saturday. I also got a pitch approved to just, I randomly submitted because I saw the opportunity of like the Pride Month edition of some horror magazine. And I wrote up like a pitch in 2 seconds for an article called All My Homies Love Cronenberg, which is just me. I just noticed a lot of trans people really like Cronenberg. And so I, and I'm non-binary. Right, exactly. And so I just like watching, you know, Cronenberg films with a bunch of my friends and like writing about the experience, sort of more doing it like Joan Didion style, where it's less like me explicitly examining the phenomenon, sort of just like hanging with my friends and chronicling it. I got word that was approved like last week, and it's due on Thursday, you know what I mean? So I'm this week is getting Game Piece redder together and watching like every Cronenberg film. It's fun.
What's like one of your standout faves?
This was crazy. Friday night, me and a bunch of friends, LD Kelly among them. Have you ever talked to LD? You'll probably at some point talk to LD. Just me and a bunch of friends watched Crash, which is a crazy movie night movie.
That's a classic.
But it was so fun. And then me and another friend did Scanners last night, which I wasn't I've heard like mixed things about, but I thought it fucking kicked.
That's
Scanners
a really
awesome.
Underrated one. I like that one because it really speaks to me as a podcastress. And
the score
is
insane too.
It's just like about like mind control and what was that? There's so many good ones. I'm a huge Cronenberg fan. I could watch all of them like over and over again. So good.
Oh my god.
Very, very visceral. I love a good like visceral experience. So Game Piece is coming up. Can you tell me a little bit about Game Piece, because I actually don't have like the full rounded
I'm
ready. Yeah,
you want the long version? I assume you do, because
yes,
we're on a
long
podcast.
Version, please.
So I had the idea for Game Piece in college, which was at this point probably 6 years ago. And the idea was, I was very steeped in like Philly. I went to school in Philly, very scooped in like a stooped, wow, steeped, stooped.
Steeped.
Steeped in, I was scooped in experimental Philly theater. There were these groups called like the Berserker Residents and stuff. And so I was really like, that's what was on my brain a lot. Mm-hmm. And I would, you know, in the summers I would go see like TJ and Dave who are improv, but in a way that's sort of like experimental theater.
Oh yeah, they used to be here.
Oh, Chicago,
constantly.
Yeah.
Like that was a huge, when I first moved to the city, all my friends would like constantly go and see. Yeah.
They're actually big influences on Game Piece in a way.
Okay, cool.
Which I'll get into. Mm-hmm. But I just like, so I had been thinking a lot, and the neo-futurists who I bring up a lot. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking a lot about like more spontaneous forms of theater, like a type of theater that could be, it's going to sound pretentious, but sort of like jazz, if traditional theater is like classical music, where you like memorize lines and then perform them. You're doing your interpretation of this role, like I don't know what pop music would be, but jazz is more like, you don't study lines, but you study specific like tropes and shapes of chords and how to solo over this. Then you all meet and play a tune that's like maybe 30 seconds long, and then you improvise over the chords. And it's just as like artistically acclaimed and complicated as classical music. You know what I mean? So I was wondering if like there could be a type of theater like that. The closest thing is improv comedy, but that feels squarely in the realm of comedy rather than theater. It has elements of theater. It's done like theater, but it that doesn't pull in like a theater going public generally. It pulls in a comedy audience, you know? And so I was thinking a lot about this. Then I saw a play at my college that a couple people were doing called the Game of Life, and it was an attempt to gamify theater. And it made me upset because I'm really good friends with a really good game designer. I was watching it, and it was like a choose your own adventure play, which is fine, but it's like this idea of like they were making it like so important that we're giving you autonomy, but they're giving you two choices to pick from. And they were kind of like these rehearsed scenes that they would do based on which choice you picked. And then you would pick one thing, but they would kind of punish you for it. Like you would pick the safe option, and it would give you like some terrible consequences. Then had this thing like, oh, wasn't that funny that like what happened? Did, you know, like it's like I
Yeah,
don't
like, oh,
want,
you chose this and you thought something,
right?
but
Which is fine if we're in the future. Like Undertale did that to video games. You know what I mean? And there are other examples, but we don't have game theater yet. Like we can't start by subverting it because once you like take our autonomy away this early in it then game theater, then it's no longer game theater. It's just like you just had a. So I was like, I was talking to my friend Day, and we were like coming up with vague ideas of how it could be done. And I knew that it would need, I like what I wanted to be was a piece that the audience can actively play, almost like a video game. Like it has an engine to it that they can legitimately push and prod and press. And based on what the audience does and says, the show can transform into that. So that would need actors who are trained in improvisation. It would probably need actors who are trained in like story structure and tropes. Sort of like a jazz musician knows like, chord changes and stuff like that. It would need probably an outside like director or like game master to kind of act as an audience
Yeah, like
conduit almost.
MC, yeah.
An MC, yeah. And it would need, I mean, it would need a lot of time to figure out what that is. And probably some written elements too, because the idea isn't to create like a totally improvised form of theater. You know, there are certain outcomes in games that are written, you know what I mean? Like, but like how we move into them rather than them being on a linear path. And then, I had finals and then was writing plays, and I just did not think about that for a while. I graduate college in 2020, COVID hits. So
And
I
then
leave
the
like,
genius just, thrust out of you.
yeah, that's exactly what it was though. I thought I was a like a novelist, a short story writer for like 2 years. And I like finished like maybe two or three short stories. And it's sad because I could write not a great, but I could write a draft of a play in like, a week. Like I'm just like so into it. And prose writing were just agony. But that didn't like it was so like, oh well, theater is I don't like Zoom. I was so like that just I was just agonizing myself, like trying to write pro that just wasn't good either. You know what I mean? It's
That's
just not
so
how
such
I
a
think.
frustrating feeling to have when you're like, I know what I must do, and I'm not seeing what I must see.
No, it never like it never felt. Yeah, for better or for worse, I feel like my plays are at least doing something. But with the stories, it always felt like I was just still trying to figure out how the fuck to do it and make a sentence that was good, but it wasn't boring. But you know what I mean?
Or
I don't
yeah,
want to be
something
too
that,
flowery.
yeah,
But I
like,
cut it down, and now it just reads like Hemingway, and I don't want to do that. You know what I mean? Like he's already done. So it's like fuck. Yeah, I couldn't get out of my head the way I can with playwriting.
I mean, ever since COVID hit, I've like been stuck. I feel like I have in some way been stuck since COVID and like stepping into like a romanticized like vision of like a sick woman who's like writing her little letters to
Sent to the
society or
sea.
something. But no, I definitely relate to that for sure.
Sent to recover by the sea. Yeah, but yeah, and so I was dating Sarah Norcross at the time, who you've spoken to, and who now she and Lydia run Theater Anywhere, which does some of the lighting and stuff. I think they just did the last adult film show and are doing that play Soda that Eric Spring wrote and Michelle Moriarty directed. And that's going at the adult film space. So they're
Shout
around.
out.
But me and Sarah were dating at the time, and she was submitting to the New York Theater Festival for her show Ulysses Missa, and I decided I would write something for it as well. And so I kind of like decided to take that idea of like game-based theater, of chance-based theater, and like pare it down to something I could do with a friend of mine. So there's a friend I did improv with in high school, this guy Michael Manzi, and we were always friends. So I wrote a play called Candyland, where it was Christian and Michael were the characters. They're based on exaggerated versions of ourselves. Like Christian was like me if it was just like talking really fast and being narcissistic, and him was just like just the more like, hey man, stonery. Like it was really like there are poles of us that we aren't always all the time, but when you meet us side by side, there is that. It was just kind of like clown versions of us, you know what I mean? And the idea of the play was that there were pockets of improvisation in it. It was like an hour-long play, and there were about 15, 10, 15 minutes left in there for it to be improvised. So like the plot I came up with was two guys stuck in a cabin in the middle of the woods waiting for their third friend who never comes. And they decide to like they don't have anything with them, their phones are dead, so they decide to play a game of Candyland with the die they find. Because Candyland literally is just like adding numbers up to the end. Like there's no game almost. You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
I
Like,
love that's why I love like Candyland as opposed to like any other game where I have to like intuitively like tap in to like the strategy like I love chess, but I'm not
No.
always like really down or like Monopoly
No.
even. Like there's a
I
lot
get
of
it.
elements.
It is so nakedly, Candyland is so nakedly like what a game is, because literally there is absolutely nothing you can do to win the game. It's completely by chance.
Yeah,
It's
just
all in the
picking
design.
cards. Yeah.
Right. It's literally all in the design. The like,
Yeah.
oh, you went up to this character. So they start doing that and they don't remember the board. So they start like coming up with this like story based on like these own characters like moving through this world almost Dungeons and Dragons style. And that was improvised. We would get suggestions of the audience from that part. Most of the play was these guys trying to figure out how to play Candyland by themselves and their relationship kind of falling apart. That was written. But this sort of like, oh, what? Okay, we're rolling the dice and you move six spaces, but that's not fun. You know, we're not kids anymore. So let's come up with a story. What does it mean that you move six spaces? Oh, well, my guy, you know what I mean? And so that was always improvised. And so it was a fun play that could change every time. Wrote a companion play to it called Correspondence. It was more 50-50. It was me and the girl. She was playing a Victorian woman who was like sending and receiving letters from her suitors. Kind of a classic thing. But every time she got a letter back, like to her from the suitor, I would pause the play and go on stage and with a typewriter collab with an audience member to write the letter she was receiving. So that took it a little further because the actual plot of the play was being influenced by the writing. And it ended with I was sort of like really into like, you know, like Mount Erie and liturgy and you know, have a nice life at the time, like hyper confessional, like too much things. So the end was we kind of like swap. It's kind of revealed that she's kind of me, and the construction that I've built is kind of falling apart, and she's just kind of just saying things about my life now. You know what I mean? Like, and eventually, she has me write a letter to myself, and then she reads it. I would improvise that based on everything that was said in that play, and we performed Candyland right before it. Suggestions from Candyland, and I would write a letter just tearing into me. It's also based on. Have you ever read? Oh my God, The Philip Roth book, where the Counterlife. The Counterlife ends with a character writing a letter to the Philip Roth insert and just tearing them apart. And I was inspired
No,
by that.
I
So I
will
just,
look into that though, because I really like
yeah,
that kind of stuff where
me too.
it's very like it all of a sudden it becomes very meta
Yeah.
out of
And
nowhere.
so I just ripped into myself based on these suggestions that I had heard throughout the night. And it was uncomfortable,
What kind
but I
of
was like, okay,
suggestions did you get?
what was that?
What kind
Literally
of
like stupid things like, oh, like in Candyland, I was playing like, I don't know, maybe a thimble. And I'm like, can I get an adjective to describe this thimble? And they were like Irish. You know what I mean? So I was playing an Irish thimble the whole time. But then in correspondence, which is more serious, I write about the fact that I have an Irish last name so I can like pass as white, even though I'm mostly Puerto Rican, but I kind of like never learned about my culture. You know me, like I like would love like using it as ammo to like dig into myself. A year later, it would have been gender stuff I was denying about myself. But like, so I want to bring that play back because there's some stuff there. But all that being said, like that is, and then right after that, that was like October 2022. I did that at the tank. Right after that, I moved to New York City, and I didn't have any full-length plays I had written, not since college, and those kind of didn't feel like me
And
anymore.
where were you moving from? Where?
So I was in Philly when me and Sarah were living together, and I submitted to the New York Theater Festival. Then I moved back with my parents for 6 months, and I grew up in a town called Dobbs Ferry, which is like somewhere between Yonkers and Sleepy Hollow, out in
Got it.
Westchester County, off the Metro North. And so when I did Candyland, and then when I did, I call them the chance plays, the double bill at the tag, that was commuting from my parents' place, which I'm lucky enough to have parents that live right outside Manhattan. I mean, that's such
That's
a,
nice.
yeah. I mean, yeah, right? Like if fucking ever like money goes crazy and I have to move back in with my parents at like 27, that sucks, but at least I'd be around.
I
You know what I
mean,
mean? Yeah.
I'll be 30 this year, and who knows? I may have to
Yeah.
do that pretty soon or tomorrow,
No,
next
it's
year.
rough out there.
You never know. And to anybody out there who is going through it, do not have any shame. I fully
No.
endorse moving back in with your parents. I'm married
No.
too, so I'm like we're totally like we don't care if we
No,
move.
there's absolutely no shame. I mean, it's completely, there never was any shame, but if there was ever a time to not feel ashamed about it, it's now, because it's
For sure.
the yeah, I mean, we don't need to get into that, but it's really rough
But
out
anyway.
there. Yeah, so I didn't have any full-length plays, so for a bit I was like submitting the chance plays as a full evening of theater, but a lot of places were like, oh, we don't really do like collections of short plays.
Yeah, they're like, what is this? The
And
writers.
I kind of forgot, but I guess I don't remember this period, but I guess for a brief period I was like, oh, well, I'll submit a proposal for that Thing Game piece that I came up with, the full-length version of this, which is mostly improvised. You know what I mean? If Candyland was 75% written, if correspondence was 50-50, this one's like 80% improvised, 20%. It's just kind of just a rule book. But I was like, I'm never, because I know it needs a lot of people. It's probably going to need some money. It's going to need like time. Like, I'm not going to, waste the time myself. Do like, it
You
needs to
you're
be.
basically creating the blueprint for
Yeah,
this.
exactly. And there are things that have, which we could talk about, like things that have been done that are similar. I don't mean that I'm like coming from nothing here, but it is a thing that we've discovered that's like, yeah, it's kind of new, and I have to base team members on this almost like culty, like I know what it is, even if we don't exactly, because we've all seen some of the things that we're basing it on, even though we can't quite articulate what it's going to become, which I will attempt to do in a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I submitted this like proposal, and forgot about it, and got involved in the comedy scene, the improv scene, because that felt easier to me than the theater scene, just because it's cheaper and there are more shows happening per week than theater, just by nature of like Improv, you don't have to rehearse. Comedy, you rehearse at home and then go up and do your set. You know what I mean? Like, comedy clubs do 3, 4 shows a night. Like, it's just
A
different
lot
from
of
theater. And
opportunities to get on stage really quick.
exactly, and meet a ton of people. And so I had like a show running monthly at the Pit. I was like doing people's improv shows. It was nice. But my home is theater, and I didn't really have that going for myself. And I was writing full length plays and sending them around, and that was fun. But like it didn't really feel like I was like genuinely considering like stopping writing plays and being like, well, if I'm writing, I might as well just like write stand up and then go do that. You know what I mean? Because like at least I'm getting some traction in the comedy world. And just as I was thinking that, August 2023, I got an email from the Center at West Park, which is a new organization based on a very based out of a very old venue. The Center at West Park is a small theater company slash producing house slash kind of like community center.
I see. I love these because I'm just like, oh, I just call them incubators, you know?
It's very much an incubator. They're based out of a 150-year-old church, must be, on the Upper West Side, called the West Park Presbyterian Church. I could get into that venue another time, but it's like been designated as a landmark, but somehow developers got an exception and still might be able to tear it down. So they're trying to raise all this money. And like, I think Mark Ruffalo didn't used to do shows at the Center at West Park. The Center at West Park is very new, but he used to do shows, I think, at that theater, like in that church. So like he's been part of the effort to save it. It's but at the same so like there's like these celebrities attached, but at the same time, like it's a very small theater company. Like it's like significantly smaller than probably the Brooklyn Center for Theater Research, even though it's this much bigger venue. You know what I mean? Like it's a very weird spot. But they had this Evolution Festival coming up, which was a festival of like new experimental works. And apparently I had submitted to that. I checked through my emails. It was literally like 11 months ago. And it was in that little period where I was sending game pieces a full thing. And they emailed me letting me know like, hey, the person in the first slot of the Evolution Festival we asked dropped out and you were our first runner up. Would you like to do game piece? And I was like, okay, let me figure out what game piece was supposed to be again. Like left there and
I
I was like,
love that. Don't you love it when
yeah.
like you are so like on some kind of tip and then you're like, "Oh, I'm going to do this project." And
Yeah.
then time goes by and you completely forget that like there
That,
was like 2 years ago where I was like, "I'm going to write a movie. I'm going to write a script." Or maybe it is just with script writing, but there's been so many times where I'm like, "Oh yeah, I've got this idea. It's going to be amazing, brilliant, the most incredible thing anyone's ever seen." And then I completely forget that I ever even had that plan in the first place. But it always comes back.
No, and it just came completely out of nowhere. And it was literally like in 4 weeks you will be performing. You know what I mean? Because it was they were hitting me up late because someone dropped out, and it was the person who had the first slot in the festival. And it was crazy because it was like
Well,
me
duty
doing this
calls.
weird. What was that?
Duty calls, you know?
Exactly. And it was me because it was me and like two like experimental dance troupes, so it was so funny. So I like read back over the pitch and remembered what I was trying to do with it, and I was like, okay, well, what I want to do is like create some kind of show that the audience can legitimately touch and interact with, not physically touch, but like m it can move it in the way that like. Well, yeah, in Sleep No More, that's immersive, and interactive in that like the cast will look directly at you or take you somewhere and do a private performance for you. But it's still, and you'll have a unique experience based on where you go. But what actually happens is all has all been predetermined. You're not playing it, you're exploring it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Or,
it's I can imagine it's kind of hard to sort of like suss out what audiences are sort of willing to
Yeah, and that's
participate with. 'Cause there's always those awkward times where it's like, okay, now this is audience, this is your turn to participate, and it's like doesn't really work or workshop
It
and
is, it is, that is 100% something you just have to figure out on stage,
yeah.
like in front of an audience. And it's like, this show is like comedy in that sense, is in that we can't just rehearse it and then do it when, like, we have to figure out what works and what doesn't by fucking it up, you know? Like,
Yeah.
it just, but it's exciting, and I like working like that. And so the big example I gave that like cued people into what I want it to be is like, I want to establish that like the audience can like give characters props in the moment, and that the audience, that the characters can make it obvious, like, oh, you two are about to, you know, break up, have a fight that's going to end your relationship. I better go outside. Oh, but it's raining really badly, and I don't have an umbrella, so I can't leave. And an audience member gives them the umbrella and they leave, or doesn't give them the umbrella and they have to stay there during that breakup scene. Or, you know, later on, another character is like, oh no, I can't go outside, I need the umbrella, and they give them the umbrella. They take the umbrella and whack someone. That's for fucking my wife. You know what I mean? Like, you start, like, if you give it to a different character, this is what happens. You know what I mean? Like, the actors have characters and the tropes that they're working off of, but there's a certain amount of improv that's happening, but it doesn't feel quite like improv because you're still responding heavily to what's going on in the moment.
I
So
like
I
this 'cause
figured,
it like it's
yeah.
like mapped out almost like a game, but the only thing that's different, it's not, you don't have a whole algorithm kind of written, it seems like.
Exactly. Exactly. So I tried to get a group of four actors together that I could train for the over the course of 2 weeks in like what I knew about story structure, like a five-act structure, a three-act structure, and like different tropes, and then like how we move into them, like kind of like a Lotsy from Commedia, like something that's rehearsed, but we don't know when it's gonna happen. You know what I mean? Like little moments like that, I think is very, I use a term called vice. I think that's very vice for this show. Do you know the term vice?
No.
That's a fucking,
I knew Lotsy, like I know
yeah.
that one.
But
Don't know
Vice is a
Vice.
Tina Landau and Bogart thing. It comes from Miami Vice and Michael Mann. Michael Mann had a guy in Miami Vice who would go around and just look at different things, like pieces of clothing and cars, and go, that's Vice. That's not Vice. That's not Vice. That's Vice. That's how I created that like very distinct Miami Vice aesthetic.
Oh, that is a really good exercise,
For
actually.
we yeah, we use the phrase Vice to indicate something that's sort of like in the show's aesthetic. It's like a good one word, one trope away to like that's Vice. And I learned that from the Berserker residents, who are devisors over in Philly. They're geniuses. So I figured that would be very Vice for us, some kind of like Lotsy, and then some ways that we could work with the audience. And then I quickly realized that in 4 weeks' notice, you know what I mean? That means in 2 weeks, I'm gonna have to have
Yeah,
actors in the room to
basically.
train for 2 weeks. And nobody was just available, even like with the pay I was offering, which was not bad, because I was getting money from the center to put this on.
Well, it's kind of stressful. We're like
Yeah,
getting money
like,
and nobody's
sorry, I just,
available.
I'm not, I have things going on, you know what I mean? Like, this is like, well, like 2 weeks' notice. So I figured, okay, this show can't be what it wants to be eventually. I'm gonna have to do like an early version of it. So what I decided to do, because I was in the improv world, was kind of do the version of this show that's a little more like an improv show. So only the game master, which I would play, had to be memorized, had to know certain things before, had to, and I would know the structure of it, which I would come up with in the rehearsals. But everyone else actually didn't even need to have ever rehearsed. Like, I can guide you through the steps of it with the audience, and I'm doing the audience interaction, and they'll kind of, that'll influence what you do. But you can, as long as I have seasoned improvisers, they can just do the show kind of like they would do any improv show.
That's nice. I
And
think,
so
yeah, it like
it
takes the
was nice.
pressure off a little bit.
It did. It kind of made it feel more like a just a Harold with more steps, that first version. I'm the first one to admit that. But it was a great starting point. It was a great jumping off point, because what I realized is that like this first time out, there's a lot of elements to figure out for this show. And we're slowly, like, now I'm at a place, you know, 8 months in, 7 months in, whatever, where we're being like, for this show, we're gonna focus on this. For this show, we have like a whole plan. But I realized, like, I gotta figure out how the audience interaction works, how to write the rule book, like what the structure of this is, and like, yeah, like how the experimental theater works with the improv. And this show ended up becoming, because like I had such a crunch time, I was like, all right, I'm gonna get a different cast for every show. Like as long as I'm doing this, like this weird thing, you know what I mean? Where it's like we don't have like one cast for it, I might as well get as many people involved as possible. So I ended up with the four shows, six people per show, six, seven people per show. It would be almost 30 people involved in Game Piece. All of them made it, almost all of them made it to at least one rehearsal. But it was kind of like it, the center at West Park turned into this fun like salon where it was like, yeah, this group of people, I'll be there. I have a residency there these 2 weeks. S like 7 to 11, if you can make it, come and we'll play. You know what I mean? That's
That's
how it
nice,
ended up
and
being.
it's very simple
Yeah.
too.
Very simple. It made things so much easier for me. And so I just like it kind of like it really took a village, but the village kind of formed around me, and it was the thing that kind of took me into this the theater scene, which was I was outside of like I asked people from Serials that I knew. I ended up having Mar from Serials, Nick Turturro, who you talked to, who's brilliant, really fucking good improviser too. I think there were other people from it. I got like Jake, Mike Manship, and Kyra from the Neo-Futurist. I got a bunch of people from the pit where I was doing improv. People from BCC where I was doing from improv.
You
I
know,
did. I got
it's so
Santi
funny.
Malin.
I've been thinking about this so much. I'm like, oh, I
Yeah.
have to do everything myself. Because I'm thinking,
No.
like, oh, it
Yeah.
takes a village. Like, when people say it takes a village,
Yes.
I think what some people get wrong is they think, like, oh, I have to build my own village. It takes my
No.
village. When in
Yeah.
fact, it takes a village. Like, the
Yeah.
village is already there. You just
You
have to
can move
bring
to the
it in,
village.
you know?
Yeah. But yeah, I literally met, I was trying to get George Oleski in it because I know he has improv background. But I went to see him in, I think it was a Matt Gazda play. I don't remember which one. And I was talking to him after, and he's like, I don't think I could do it. You should ask this guy though. And I turned and it was Santi, who I didn't know at the time. He was like, he's really fucking funny. So just I was just like, all right, fuck it. I just like asked Santi to come to rehearsal. Just like I was like, yeah, I like this vibe. He turned out to be fucking great. Like he's hilarious. You know what I mean? I got Michelle Moriarty, who I met. You know what I mean? Like it was truly
Really,
like,
so really st packed with talent.
thank
Honestly,
you.
yeah.
Yeah. And I was like doing my little like, okay, this person's gonna go on this show because I think these two would be fun together, and this
Oh,
person's
that
gonna
is like the
like,
best
yeah.
part. I love that like casting ha is its own art altogether as
Yeah.
well, because it's kind of like this curated effort of like pairing together, like, you know, using people
Yes.
as just like complements to each other.
Yeah.
It's like putting
And
together outfit almost.
yes, and because of that, I mean, I truly owe this show like and the Center at West Park like so much because those relationships have gone on to take me through the theater world. I knew I needed a co-writer because I'm going to be directing and kind of in it, so I want someone else who just focuses on the text. So I there was this playwright I loved who I just had read a New Play Exchange but had never met called Kelsey Sullivan, and I found like stalked her, found her on Instagram, found out that she was having a show up at the Brick in the entire bag New Works. I went to it and introduced myself to her and got her to work on writing this with me. Now I've directed her plays. We were friends. We're like Penn and Teller. You know what I mean? Like we really got along. That night also like Patrick Vermillion had a play up there and I met him, and now he did stuff at the Spade and he fucking reads my like early drafts of my plays and gives me really good notes 'cause he's brilliant. You know what I mean? And like, and then, you know, this person, this person, Alex Beige, heard about the show and came up to it and introduced himself to me after. And now Alex, such a good friend, and Alex has worked at the Spade twice. And I
When
mean,
you like 'cause it's interesting, 'cause I think a lot of it is like also about like following and pressing
yeah.
into what you're interested in, and just like, you know, following your like t like leaning into your tastes and like going there and like
Yes.
interacting with it. What are like some elements or components of like a collaborator or maybe even a play that you see that like certain like very like special components that like stand out to you the most?
For a collaborator, it's someone who is like someone who's down, who doesn't mess around, who's this is what I do, and I'm going to work to do it. And these are a lot of the people I've met who really care about this. I mean, it's not, again, my friend Gracie gives me shit for always for like not being interested in commercial theater. And it's not that I dislike people who are into commercial theater, but it's just like I don't know how to work with you because it's like, no, I can't pay you that much for this, but I'm making nothing. I'm losing money on this. It's not
Yeah,
because
that's a, yeah,
I'm
I'm the
making all the
same
money.
way.
You know what I
Like
mean?
sometimes
Like,
like I'll be in a space and
yeah.
I will feel like sort of a disparity between like, okay, I'm here 'cause I genuinely want to be here and I'm
Yeah.
also losing money on this
Yeah.
and I just ha can always like feel a sensation. I'm like
Yeah.
somebody is like
So
it's just yeah, it's a vibe.
there's, I mean, there's a punk rock quality, you know what I mean? Like I fucking my I guess I mean I'm punk rock and I'm sober, right? So you could call me straight
Okay, but
edge.
to me, punk I feel like is very synonymous with like the sober community.
I agree. But that's neither here nor there.
Anyways,
But Fugazi and Ian MacKaye are huge influences on me in life and art. And Fugazi was, I mean, at the height of their popularity, legends being really careful about like living very working class and being careful about what they would eat on tour so that they could do $5 tickets and all ages shows at places that like weren't selling alcohol. So just the kids could come because that's who it was for. It was for these punk rock teenagers to have somewhere to go. You know what I mean? And just like living like these like monks for the service of not the art but the people, because the tickets were $5. Like literally, like if you want to come see Fugazi, you can. We're touring. We're coming to your town, and we're charging you nothing, basically. You know what I mean? And that's so gorgeous to me. And they would, not to mention the fact that they would go up there with no set list and could play every single one of their songs and would just like vibe it out. I mean, oh, you want to play this one? That's so game piece too. You know what I mean? So someone like that, and these are the kind of people that I've been meeting who theater to them is this kind of punk rock endeavor, is this kind of noise. We're not here to fuck around. We're here for the art. We're here to try to get to the heart of something, to look some truth dead in the eye, all those purposes of art. And this is a great segue to the last person I met through Game Piece, who's become one of the most important people in my life. My good friend LD Kelly, who, I mean, just the amount of things that I owe LD. I mean, I reached out to the Kendra, the volunteer coordinator at the New York Neo-Futurists, and it was like, do you know any stage managers? And she sent out a blast, and LD was someone who responded. Someone I wouldn't have met otherwise, and was this fantastic stage manager, and runs a Monday night play reading group called Dramarama. Through coming to Dramarama, I've met some of my closest friends, in this world, closest, who we go to experimental theater shows together. We go to punk rock shows together. We saw a band called Stars Revenge together, and they're two trans women. And they closed the set with a song called, and with the chorus of "Me and My Friends Don't Fuck Around," and that was so, it's so punk rock, it's so affirming, it's so queer. We don't fuck around, man. We're gonna
Yeah,
show
like
up for each other. You know what I mean? Like,
that's very
yeah.
much like what I gravitate, like anything
Yeah.
that it takes a little bit more energy for me to not that it's bad, but it's like anything that's like, oh gosh, there's so much like preparation involved and
Yeah,
a lot of
yes.
different moving parts that like have to take. I'm more of like, okay, just are you down? Okay, cool. And
Yeah.
that's gonna be the same energy
Yeah.
consistently. So, yeah.
It's like I don't know if this relate. I think in like pop culture, and that's like my the finite and the infinite and all that. But
The mainstream.
right there's a There's a Jid lyric, which is like, everyone's a star, every day's the move, which I still don't know what the fuck that means, but I think that relates to what we're saying of this just like this type of like looking at theater almost like this like the hangs, like, okay, what's the move? What are we doing? How are we doing it? You know what I mean? This really like, let's give it to them, man. Let's go up there and like it's not about, oh, is it so clean and rehearsed and perfect? Or, oh, what play are we doing? Or is it scripted? Or it's fucking, yeah.
Yeah, like basically kind of same like thespian energy, but without extreme long amounts of time like negotiating or arbitrating, kicking back and forth different ideas. It's like very instantaneous, like right now, down, committing, stay consistent, same energy. So
It's just so beautiful to me. And as we moved into doing stuff at the Spade, it kind of coagulated into almost what's becoming a scene. Like someone named Ava O'Day, who's now a very close friend of mine, but I didn't know at the time, submitted a play. And Ava was friends with LD. And so Ava got LD to be the director, and LD cast someone from Game Piece. And then Alex Bage, who I didn't really know at the time, submitted a play. It was like, holy shit, Alex is a brilliant writer. Cast two people from Serials who were also in Game Piece. And then, you know, and then people, and then I directed Kelsey's play, who helped me with Game Piece, and I cast Michelle in it. And then slowly you, and then some people start showing up at LD's Dramarama, and slowly you see this new scene starting to form just based on this. And it's I don't know, Game Piece has sort of been my way to navigate through the theater, the theory, whoa, the theater world, like kind of like making these bold assumptions and guesses at what theater could be, and you know, booking the space while we don't even know what the show is or looks like, and just having to base it on people who kind of trust that we're going after the same thing. And so the center was lucky enough, was kind enough to let me do it again in December. I was like, okay, this time I want the same people, I want the same group that rehearses, the same six people that rehearse, to be the group that performs in the show. That's all I wanted. Want to see how that changes it. Want to add a couple more scripted moments. So we had like a movement per a person designed to do movement. And we had some like movement sequences that were non-comedic. And we started playing with masks. And something also we also do that I double down on is like we do live writers' rooms where we the audience builds a character with us. Where the cast says certain things about this protagonist, the audience votes on whether that's true or false based on these. I got like these little like voting paddles, and then they could also say objection and change what was said, and then I say whether that's true or false. And they've given us some brilliant things that way, and the audience can bring props from home. And the second time around, they did, like Rocky Horror style, bring props from home. There's a certain part of the show before the second act where act one, you vote on the character and build the character out. That's how you interact with it. And you could give us suggestions during the writer's room too. I'm sort of leading it, and the actors come up with ideas, but they could be like, oh, can this guy play the dad? I'm like, yeah, this guy could play the dad. And then so for the next version, we really doubled into the while the cast does a writer's room, I'm going into the crowd and getting these things people brought from home. And they're deciding which character they want to have that thing they brought from home and how they want it to be used. So there's a picture of me. Someone brought this like crown with like these weird thorns on, with these like, and that ended up like being the Pirate King's hat. It like created this whole character. Like truly what they brought from home making what the show became. Like it's I started to it's still not there, it's still maybe like was like 30% of the way to what it wants to be, but you just see that nugget of like that beauty. And then a beautiful thing happened, one of those theater miracles where we were getting a lot of like nautical suggestions, so and pirate stuff. So the show often ends up happening at sea. It's something about the whimsical nature of it. People are like, oh, they're in a ship. I don't know what that is. But Game Piece tends nautical.
That's
But
interesting that there are like recurring themes.
I don't know.
And
We're
nobody
gathering
knows
data.
why.
Like we're absolutely learning things. And I've also as the game master, gotten good at like knowing how to prompt the audience and what
Yeah.
will get them
Well,
to
yeah, I
respond a
was
little bit more.
wondering, like, there are those moments. I'm sure you're very like comfortable with like those kind of almost awkward pregnant pauses in an audience where it's like, oh, what do I I'm spitballing here, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say, I mean, maybe this is perhaps too confident. We'll see how Saturday goes. But it's not really anymore. Like, I've kind of learned how to guide them through this. You know what I mean? Like, there was a moment where when the audience votes on whether a statement's true or false, like if let's say one of the actors says, we use the phrase "it has been said that" because it's whimsical. So they'll all say "it has been said that" and then a declarative statement, and the audience votes on whether that's true or false. And they'll say "it has been said that the protagonist loves dogs," and the audience will vote true or false. During the first show, I was counting the responses, but I realized like that takes too long. So whatever I see first, whoever gets the first hand
Yeah,
up,
you can
it
kind
whether
of
it's
like
red or green,
gauge, you know,
yeah,
make a flash
exactly.
decision based on like how
Yes.
many. Yeah.
Works so much smoother. And
Yeah.
like we had a second round where people could say objection, and then like a third round where I would do the writer's room. And now it's just like if someone's like, the protagonist has a tough relationship with the father, the audience will go true, and I'll go, okay, that's true. And Cole, can you play the father? Cool. Like I do the writer's room during that, you know what I mean? And so or maybe some of the
That's a
audience will go,
lot
no.
too.
I think Michelle is the father. And I'll be like, you know what? Yeah, because Michelle does that old man voice. Michelle should be the father, you know. And like, so it's like it has this really back and forth forum theater. I call it like an Augusto Boal game show. It's not for political purposes. I do write very political plays, but this one's for fun. You know what I mean? I'm used, but I am using a lot of that
And I
non-Aristotelian
think a
theater.
lot of like what you're describing, it just sounds like really a master class in just being an MC and really having not control over how the show goes or how it's received, but just being the engine that like, you know, has like control over just moving it, kind of just like pushing it and like being the actual like gas, step putting your foot on the gas. And with a lot of like managing a lot of different moving parts all the while.
No, and that all comes from hosting improv shows for 8 months, you know what I mean? And like learning what works, what doesn't work, what audiences respond to, what they don't, you know what I mean? Like how to keep the show fucking moving.
What do audiences not respond to is what I'm interested
Audiences don't respond to like open-ended questions, like
in. Oh yeah.
does anyone want to volunteer? Or it's like, you give me
Right.
this.
Right.
It's
Yeah.
like, can I, even when you're asking for a suggestion from an improv, every improviser will tell you, it's not give me a suggestion, that they pause at that. It's like, give me a like a one syllable word, or you know what I mean? Like you have to do that, and then you don't stand there while everyone starts screaming out things and wait for like half a minute to be like, oh, what? I can't hear anything. And do bits about it. That works, but then the audience is like, all right, when is this gonna? You say you get hear the first one, you go, and I get this is my OCD, but I'm deeply sensitive to a show's flow, and I like to think that's what helps me run stuff like this.
Yeah, because like as an audience member too, like, and when you're in, you know, in the same room together, you can always very palpably like feel like, oh, this is where the beat should move a little faster, you know?
Well, and that's the other like don't fuck around thing, right? It's like I'm not here. I'm here for you to have fun. I'm not here to have fun. You know what I mean? Like I'm working right now, and if I feel like okay, this has gone on too long, we're moving on. You know what I mean? Like this is for you. This is the audience's. You know, like and that's kind of consider myself, it's a phrase I borrowed from the writer Stephen Milhauser, an artist showman in that sense. Like I know there's an element
Yeah, the
of like
showmanship
putting on the
kind
white
of.
gloves, which I love. I don't think there's anything wrong with being
The
an
MC
entertainer.
from Cabaret.
Exactly. And so there's this moment at the end of the show. So like as I said, it's broken into three acts, and I kind of train the audience, the actors on some three act structure elements, but also a lot of them know it from the Harold, which is very three act structurery. Which is an improv
Oh
thing.
yeah. Oh man, that's been so long since I've heard that
Right?
word. And wow.
But So act one, yeah, we do that whole thing where we build out the character and kind of like I'm assigning roles based on what the audience says. It's very fun. Act two is before it is the props. And act three, during the beginning of the show, the way it used to work was I would go around with a bunch of pens and index cards and get people's favorite endings from like literature, film, TV, plays, and I would write them on the they would write them on the card and their name on the back. We put them in a little box, and at the end of the show, the cast takes them from the box and writes a bunch of them on this big wheel that we bought upstage, and we spin the wheel. Whichever one, because so we've gone right up to the end of this story, right up to the climax, like something big is about to happen. Spin the wheel, whichever one it lands on, we have the audience member's name on the back. It's congratulations, you win. You're going to tell us why you like this ending so much and how we can do it in the context of this story. Like, you know what I mean? And so that is where the fucking magic happens. We had one really special one where the audience asked for a where are they now? That's their favorite kind of ending. And so I had the actors, I just came up with this game on the spot. And this is part of the process is you watching me like, okay, maybe we could do it this way. I literally had all the actors stand in a line, and one by one, each character would step down stage, and the rest of them would narrate where they are now in like one word things. And
Wow.
the audience fucking loved it. And we did the
This
protagonist
does make
last, of
so much
course.
sense. Like, it does remind me of like a version of an improv game we used to play in college. But I mean, there's so many. I this reminds me of a game. There's a game called like it's called like press conference. You know, like doing a press conference and then like the basically the audience based on the questions they ask them decide who they are and like stuff like that. But anyway, it just sounds very similar.
No, totally. And that's I mean I've taken so much from like long form forms like Harold and short form forms, because that's often ways to get audience interaction like that. And then we had a really beautiful one, kind of like a I wish it had been filmed, kind of a miracle, one of like the three or so miracle theater moments I've had in my lifetime. It was nautical. And so naturally, you start making references when you're doing an improvised play to like other nautical media. Hook had come up a couple times, like the stuff with the marbles, which is an element of Hook.
Oh, no, it is. There are marbles. Wow, blast from the past.
Someone had referenced that specifically. It had become a plot point because we were kind of like based around Hook, and it was fun. We and so but it only been referenced a little bit, but like it was enough for it to be memorable. Fucking swear to God, six seven like 60 people were there. They all write their favorite endings. We don't prompt them for their endings. It goes into the thing, and then we put 12 up on the board, and then we spin the board. It fucking lands on a hook, and I was like I stunned for a little bit. Like it took me, and I was almost like upset. I was like, they're gonna think that that was like that's like too
Yeah,
good. You know what I mean?
that's like
Like,
way too, it's
and
strange
you could
almost.
just see everyone in the audience like, and so that was like truly a magical theater moment that it came together that way. So yeah, I mean, all that, Jesus Christ, you want to talk about a long answer, but that's sort of what game piece has been up until this point. Now I have a we have a but since December we've been working on getting it to the next step, which the next step is a bespoke ensemble for the show, so that what we learn can stick and knowledge can drag and carry, you know what I
Yeah,
mean?
like kind of like a repertory
Exactly.
sort of form.
We've got five six people. We also Something I was very interested in from the beginning, because they like that I have this like playwright and director brain, and that I'm like kind of doing these writers' rooms at the beginning gives it a unique storytelling quality, a way for me to, without giving them notes, because that's obnoxious, to kind of direct and conduct the improv. So we've come up with a series of hand signals. We've devised a series of hand signals, which I based on Frank Zappa. I've also learned that there's a
I
thing
love Frank
called
Zappa.
Oh, he's my favorite artist of all time.
I
Like,
mean,
number one.
like whenever I'm like kind of like trying to tap into an archetype and I'm like, what is a really inspiring like figure that is also very kind of, I would almost describe Frank Zappa as like non-binary almost like
Dude,
is like
if he was around now, yeah, I mean, he was so on another planet of brilliance, in my opinion. I
Yeah, I
don't talk
saw
about him much, but
a sculpture
yeah.
play
Nice.
that was underscored with just all of, it was like a sculpture play in Miami, and it was basically all underscored by like Frank Zappa's music, and it was really good.
Yeah, Hot Rats is my all-time favorite album.
Yeah.
He is, yeah, probably my number one favorite artist of all time. It's like, right, like it's like him, Ian MacKaye, fucking like, Annie Baker. You know what I mean? Like it's really like he's just one of the biggest influences on my art and my art making. So, okay, imagine, yeah, if you were gonna combine like game, theater, improv, and there's really an early Mothers element to this show too, because that's what I love. I like that quality he was able to have that sort of has never been replicated. Something else we've added is there's a musician involved with the show. This guy Jay Reid, who is a brilliant guitarist and and piano player and violinist, and also a brilliant improviser. But his ability to combine those things and to do an improv scene with the violin in his hand, and then know when to leave the scene, and then start playing for someone else to and to spontaneously come up with something to underscore what's going on. I have never met someone who is that good at doing that. And he'll go from the violin and like, okay, this moment needs the piano, and I'll run over to the piano. He is like on another level with that, and he's so fucking funny too. Like you wouldn't even you would go see him. He performs at the Brooklyn Comedy Collective a lot. He's like at the level where like you would not think that comedy was not his first love. You know what I mean? Where like he started by getting so good at music. He's the accompanist of the show. He's all and he like wrote a theme song for the show. And in the future, we're looking on like ways to get him even more involved. We're gonna try to like create that's for the next show. He's big into the
The
Mothers as
accompanist is
well.
just like the person that carries, you know?
Yeah. He is the only person I've ever met that knows more about Frank Zappa than I do. I love Jay, and I'm so happy that I'm working with him, and he really, really gets the show. So that's something we've added, like this guy who's like come up with a musical language specifically for the show. That's all live. We've added these hand signals so I can kind of conduct the show as it happens. And we've added there's an ensemble, a bespoke ensemble. So I've been able to direct the improv a bit. Like, actually, this type of thing is too silly. You can't do something like that. Or this can be, and what it also means is that when I do this hand signal, that doesn't just mean expand on that point. It means come down stage while you expand on that point and monologue. And if I go like this, someone else come in behind that character and you transition to that scene that you were just talking about in the monologue. So I'm literally through rehearsal of these moves finding ways to direct scenes through, or I'll hold up two characters and everyone else stay off, just these two for now, and
And
then
then
now you
when you're
come
in
on.
rehearsal, do you ever find yourself doing like like okay, I'm gonna like do these hand signals 'cause I think this is going this way, and then does it not, do you have to kind of think about or like learn through trial and error certain patterns of situations, because I can see that being a situation where you're like, oh, I directed it this way, and like I don't know if that is gonna, really, work out as well, but I don't know.
Well, it's very much I'm very much it is live directing, so it's very much like plugging something into a computer and then seeing what it does with it. Like it's like I'm hitting inputs, but it's like they're gonna interpret it as they do. But we did we have learned ways that like okay, we had a couple that like weren't very clear or like were too ambiguous, so they got cut. Or some that we could just like the ambiguity of them. Like I do this Spock hand, that means make a fucking huge choice, like weird out there choice. And that's just for I don't know what's gonna happen, but
There's
I
a
want
lot
the
of
weird. But then there's like, this is volume up, you know what I mean? And that, or this is scream, you know what I mean? So like, yeah, which that's
There's a good
directly from,
variety for sure. Yeah.
yes,
That's awesome.
exactly. Yeah, and that's kind of what we're adding for this version. I'm also, you know, I've got other producers on it with me, Anna Watera and Kelsey Sullivan. And so that's the show. It's going to be, right, in that respect, it's going to be even more interactive, even more out of the traditional improv world. For the next one in July at Purgatory, we're hoping to add, for the first time, right, like add like maybe synths and stuff or Foley sounds for Jay to do, and then also like sets and props, like just shit that we have that based on where we are, the cast can like construct a makeshift set out of or makeshift prop. Because that I think takes it to that next level outside of improv where everything's mimed. We're like, oh, you said office, and then we just created an office. You know what I mean?
What
We're
makes
also
a
gonna
now
add.
I 'cause I love props. What makes a good prop to you? Is it like, okay, something that is very like explicitly what it is, like a pair of glasses or a prop, I guess, on the flip side, something like just a random piece of foam in a random shape.
For this show, we've learned it's like certain like objects that are just so adaptable. Like a curtain you can do so much with. Chairs, obviously, you could do so much with. We want like fabrics, ideally, that we can use to represent certain things. But then if it's stuff from the audience, like yeah, we do like if it's really specific. Like that's a rule, is that like it's not the prop game from it. Like if the audience gives you a banana, you can't use that banana as a phone. Like the joke, that what's going to be delightful to them is if you eat that fucking banana. It's not that you're using. They gave
Definitely.
you a banana. You have a banana
They
on.
want to
Someone,
see that,
right?
they brought in
Someone
a
gave a
typewriter and they
fucking.
want you to see,
They were eating Triscuits in the theater, and they were like, "Here, take the Triscuits." So someone just made a part of their character. They were just eating Triscuits the whole time, and like it worked, you know? Like that's what they want. That's what's unique to this show. You know what I mean? You can't any. You can go to any show and see someone like pretending a. You know, their hand is their phone. You know what I mean? Like, when
Or
someone
like
gives you
I
their
remember
iPhone,
like it was in improv, it was like, don't do this, don't do like the hang ten for a
that's true.
phone.
Yeah, or like the gun. You don't do this. You do this.
Oh my gosh, yeah,
Yeah, but no,
definitely.
specificity is really important to me. And then the big thing we're adding for the next show is movement. In the past, we would do. I would play a song by Have a Nice Life, and there'd be kind of like a movement sequence, a dream sequence based on the plot, which was good and would have cool moments in it, but the transition was always tough, you know? So we're gonna work with a movement coordinator to find spontaneous ways to go into that through Jay's live music.
Yeah, I think this is isn't this a form? It's kind of isn't this also like a parallel to the Herald? Like it's called the Dream. Am I being crazy? I think
I never heard of the dream, but that sounds very improv-y.
I mean, it's basically kind of like what you're describing. It's like playing out, like someone describes their dream, and then everyone just goes and like does a Herald style interpretation of that dream. But
That
yeah,
sounds
that
great.
is like it's a good way to like inform a show.
And it would be largely nonverbal and physical, and yeah, which I just think is beautiful. Then finally, September, for the anniversary show, we want to finally get Lotsy in.
Oh,
I
perfect.
like know I have the name of a Comedia person I want to reach out to. It's so fucking ambitious because even Lotsy is in a dialogueless form, Comedia, you know what I mean? Like there's no words in Comedia. And so I don't know what that would mean. And that really would transform the show. I think it would make it become what it wants to be, but it's gonna be hard. The
So
idea
would it
of
be
okay,
like
now we
one
have
person or like several people or
No,
just
it would be the cat. It would be the cast. It would be like we have a whole fucking rehearsed dinner scene that we might not do, but if it comes like, oh shit, it makes sense for these characters to go to dinner, then we do this whole rehearsed dinner scene we have, or like this farce scene with slamming doors, and people are like, what the fuck? And
Yeah,
then
that would be really
we work that into the
cool.
plot. I think that'd be amazing. Or if we have like a whole choreographed dance, you know, like just a bunch of different things that might happen, but aren't, we're not trying to make them happen.
Yeah, but if
That
there's an
would require a
opportunity, you're
lot.
ready.
Exactly. So that is where this show eventually wants to go. And then the only thing I can think of adding after that is now the audience can come up on stage and play. Not always, but if there's a moment where that can happen, that's when I think the show has reached what it wants to be. Or that moment I described from the beginning,
You got it.
with the umbrella, like someone
Oh yeah,
might, like
someone
I think
smacks the audience, gives the umbrella. Yeah,
like
that, I
I
mean,
think
like,
that we're a step away from that's when we can finally get like Lotsy and then the audience playing. We're finally working towards a place where finally an actor mid-scene could be like, please, someone give me that umbrella. Okay, thank you. And then continues the, or if they don't get it, they have to, like, if that's where the show can get to and it's fluid and it's not gimmicky and it's not ironic and you're not making fun of it, like, oh, guess I didn't get, like, and it's clean and tight and the audience knows because they've maybe seen the show before, like The Infinite Wrench, like, then I think we're fucking golden. Like, I think so. And that's literally, we're looking at a year from now.
It feels to me like, okay, it's like live improvised slapstick, but audience informed, kind of like, okay, I'm in a scene, someone give me a cell phone, or someone wipe my mouth because I'm eating a piece of pizza or something crazy like that.
Exactly.
Wow, that's crazy. And then so for like the music that is added, I'm wondering, like, would you kind of envision this with like the violin and all of the different like musical elements? What are you kind of like envisioning in terms of like song and dance, or just mostly like informing what the environment is?
I mean, ideally it's a band, right?
For
For a bunch
sure.
of synths, like some kind of jazz band that Jay has himself has trained to respond to a certain number of prompts. You know what I mean? Right now it's just Jay because that's all we have the money for. I mean, some of the sounds we really like working in are the theme song that I come out to kind of starts like I'm the Slime in a Mayhem and then moves into this sort of like Michael McDonald ass like yacht rock song. I think that's definitely of the world of this. I mean, I love metal. I think some kind of working, we eventually do want to get it to a place where Jay can be using his electric guitar. It's currently the acoustic because of both the advantages and the disadvantages of the space. Advantage of the space, the acoustics are amazing. He could just play his acoustic guitar in that giant theater and everyone will hear him. Disadvantage of the space, it's not very technologically advanced, and I don't know if it could handle him plugging an electric guitar in,
Where's that sound gonna go, or like, is it going
yeah,
to
or
go?
literally, like, I don't know if there's an outlet on the stage. Like, so, like,
That
but
is a challenge.
at Purgatory, like, yeah, I think we want to, like, get him fucking with the light, with the pedals and everything, and maybe, like, buy him a synth, do a fundraiser to get him a synth where he can, like, create all sorts of crazy noises. Like, I think that it's, yeah, I want it to be out there. I want it to be challenging. I want this show to be challenging. Like it should be, I believe in a sort of like popular avant-garde. I believe in a, what did Mark Fisher call it? A pop modernism. You know what I mean? Where like, it's difficult and it challenges you, but it's not there to alienate you and to say, fuck you. And, like, it's, yeah, and I think we can
Like,
make
it's so
things that are
funny.
really
Like, I know,
beautiful in
like,
that
the
sense.
phrase "for the people, by the people" is used so much, but I
Yeah.
guess to, kind of press deeper into that, it can be something that's, for, it's literally for the people, and it's just
Yeah.
a form of communication, or like seen as like an alternate form of communication that's beyond just like having a conversation. I think is like a really good way to put it. And yeah, I think people have sort of like idea about like live theater and improvised theater and like performance art and stuff. And I think sometimes we don't think that way, that it's actually its own form of communication. It's kind of just like its own language, and like you as an audience
Yeah.
member are there to like interact with it or communicate with it, and like whatever that means,
Exactly. Well, and then ideally this show would make that literal. Not just communicate it in the fit and what you're getting out of it, but literally putting into it. And again, that is asking a lot from an audience member. But I mean, we're shooting for the moon with this one, right? Like, I'm not shooting for the moon with all my I got a play that's got four characters in it, and we're doing it in a coffee shop. You know what I mean? I got plays that are, I'm trying to submit to, like, residencies and stuff. The Spade performs in basements. This is the shoot for the moon one. And but like, you go see TJ and Dave. You've seen them?
I haven't seen them actually, weirdly
Yeah.
enough, but I just know that
Well,
like people would all go see them constantly. It was like,
yeah.
I mean, it was one of the most popular
Yeah.
running like regular like running shows here for the longest
Yeah.
time, and they would sell out consistently, and
Yeah.
people would be
So
constantly, similar to New York, like, and people would be constantly moving to Chicago for literally for like that whole concept, specifically just to go to that show and like to be around the community. It's very powerful. It's very powerful.
yeah, you go see that show, and it's a brilliantly constructed show. That's the thing. It's not just that they're brilliant, it's that they've come up with a really fucking good a simple show format, but a really good one. Because everyone knows, they say, trust us, this is all made up, and they just start. They don't get suggestions. Before that, though, they come out to a song by their friend Ike Riley, and the song is called Commie Drives a Nova. It has nothing to do with the two of them. It's a shithead. It's a great song. It's a shithead rock and roll song about this guy bragging about his communist girlfriend and how much he loves fucking her. Like, it is a hilarious song, and it is, they blast it loud, and it is like, but if you don't like rock music, or if you don't like loud music, it's obnoxious, and I love it. They blast it, and the audience fucking sings along. And there's a point where drink to the party, drink to the host, and the guitar goes bum 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 bum. And the audience, some audience members know all the words. I know all the words. Me, my friend Michael knows all the words. We sing along to it. Everyone in the audience, it's a bum bum woo, bum bum woo. Everyone does it because they've all seen them before, or they've been told about it. And if you didn't do it the first time, when he goes, fuck this party, let's hit the host, you bet everyone there is going boom boom, let's hit the coast, boom boom woo. And it's this giant moment, and they come out and they walk around stage and they talk to each other a little bit while the entire song plays. And it is this weird, beautiful moment that the audience participates in. Or you think of, like, the Rocky Horror Picture Show, where people
I
yell
was
out
just gonna
things and they
say,
know.
like, yeah, people think
Yeah,
like it's so hard to get audiences to like interact with stuff, but like once you find something that sticks, easy,
and so
easy.
what I'll say is that they're already bringing stuff from home. They're already bringing props. You know what I mean? That's step one. Like, I advertised it, and I was like, well, there's no way anyone's actually, well, they did this time. First time they didn't, because nobody knew Game Piece when we had the first show. Now a couple people know Game Piece. Some people brought, and for the rest, we had stuff already. And then ideally, we'll get, we'll open a PO box. People will donate shit, and then, oh, maybe my thing will be seen in the next show, or that, we'll tour it, and we'll go to Philly, and they'll have their own shit. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like this rock band of a theater piece.
Well, yeah,
Again,
I mean, it's.
ambitious. All of this probably won't happen, but this is the one. This
Oh,
is the
it's gonna
one I'm being
happen.
ambitious on.
It's gonna
Yeah. Well, I
happen.
hope so. I mean, yeah.
But I really like the like idea of like seeing it as like, okay, have to put a rock band together, like have to bring in people that like if you know, and you have to like stay keep that energy,
Yeah.
which is really really hard to like kind of lock people in as like repertory members. But it sounds like it's like slowly starting to happen.
Well, what do you mean by repertory members?
I guess if okay, so as far as I understand, like a repertory is like you have just like members of a company or a group or whatever, and they're just kind of like static as players in the project, and they like regularly return, or like
So, not anymore. That's how it was before. Now it's the sleight of hand ensemble, and we are a, it's like a band. Like, there's, it's, I mean, me, Anna, and Kelsey run it. Kelsey's off in Scotland, so she's not there for rehearsals, but she's co-producing it. She writes it with me, and me and Anna do most of the producing. I sort of I'm kind of like the front person in a way where I host the show and I created this one that we're doing. Ideally in the future we'll create other shows that aren't by me, but this one I created. And then it's Michelle Moriarty, Grace Crick, Isaac Washington, Cole Ortiz, Macis, holy shit. Yeah, Jay Reid and Aaron Linker. And they're all brilliant. And they're all at all the rehearsals. We booked the rehearsals around them, which we didn't
Cool.
have up until this point, but starting in December, we had people who were like, and in the pitch to it, I was like, you are going to be at all the rehearsals and in all the shows. You can miss a rehearsal, you can miss a show, we'll replace you for one show. But the idea is that it's going to be the same group of people. Like it's not
And
just,
we're booking in like the
this
show
group.
around you, essentially.
We're booking it all around them. And there's a
That makes
commitment to
sense.
it. And so I was able to, I had to find people who I thought, didn't just do well in the show, but I saw for the future vision of the show. Who kind of took it, I mean, not serious, not a serious show, but who were doing, who were not mocking the show and who are kind of along for the ride. Took a while, but we've got them. And so it's not right now, it's not it was very much a repertory, and the spade is a lot like a repertory where it's just like a lot of people that, but I'm kind of the only like member. But this one is like a group of folks that ideally people will get to know and love over time and through exposure. After the Purgatory show, we want to start like getting someone to film the show and posting reels.
Oh yeah, that's like one of the most difficult parts because it's always like those moments where you're like, oh my gosh, that was an incredible moment. Who captured it? And then you really kind of have to have like a designated person to like be there and capture certain moments. Because the idea is like sometimes like you can have a show where you encourage the audience to take as many pictures as possible. But I mean, if your show is so good, they're not even looking at their phone. So
Exactly. I've been pretty good about hiring photographers for shows, but videographers is tough. The Spade, everything has been filmed, but the Spade happens in smaller venues. This one's hard. They literally hired a fucking videographer for the when we did it part of as part of that festival, and it just was unusable because the space is so big and our actors were in the house, like, and they just couldn't, you know what I mean? So, but when it moves to Perg, when it moves to a smaller house, I think that's when we film a show.
I've seen people do like set up certain like multi-cam situations.
Ooh, and you get
And like cut
edits.
it. Yeah, I don't know. There's a bunch of different
Pro
ways you can
shot.
do it. But yeah, it is hard to like capture like those moments or like footage that you is at least usable, I think. Especially when people are like running around and moving, there's a lot happening.
Totally.
So
Oh, it's tough.
between so I mean you've got game piece going on, and then I know, we'll get into a couple of like your we'll Your plays will make a re-emergence on the podcast, but in the meantime, what are you kind of like working on, just writing wise, writing plays?
So, I mean, again, you'll talk to the team about Everyone in New York is Beautiful, but I shouldn't even say I'm working on that writing wise because that's just done. That's been done for a while. I wrote the first draft in
It's
2022.
ready to fly.
It's been sending it around, and I'm just excited about that going up. I'm working on a play called It is in a middle-ish draft. Like it's done. I can't see it going through a lot more revisions before we try it on its feet, you know? And that's sort of like I call it my T for T thriller. It's when I first started writing, I was like very boy, very teenage boy. And so I would like was doing imitations of some of the most masculine and like actiony playwrights out there. So it was all like Gurgis and McDonough, and I was even trying to be Tarantino on stage. And plays that I like wrote, I think, pretty good dialogue for and had interesting structures, but just weren't saying anything at all. Because I'm not those writers. So now, after having written Everyone in New York is Beautiful, which is just a very gay, like poly rom-com play, like there's not a fucking violent thing in it. It's a very emotionally violent, but I'm coming back to the
That's what we
thriller
love over
genre.
here.
Yeah. I'm coming back to the thriller genre and looking at it from the lens of queerness and God, particularly like transition and Christianity. Which those are hidden themes within it. It's not, like no one comes out in the play. It's not integral to
It's like
it, but
already baked in kind of to those
it's pretty baked in. So it's about
Mm-hmm.
a it's about a trans dude named Clarence who steals $10,000 from his ex-girlfriend, who's also trans, Veronica, because he's going through a tough time. And he just finds it under her bed and knows that she comes from like money, like a lot of money. So he's like, she probably doesn't need this. And we don't really like each other even anyway. He's just like hooking up with her, and he's like, this is mine. I'm taking this. And it turns out that was money her cousin was her boyfriend's cousin, who's in the Latin Kings. It's like hot money that he was storing under her bed. So he gets like all these people trying to shoot him after him. And so it's kind of got this Sam Shepherd-y like this man and this woman like who really love each other but hate each other. But they're queer. They're so queer, and it's different. And there's a love, and there's a tenderness, and there's an understanding that comes through it, and in a unique way because of that. They're also both them and another character, the other trans character in the play, this guy Rat. They're all addicts, and so it's deeply about that and how desperately, that and poverty force you to live. That poverty and being of a marginalized identity force you to live. And I'm really it's the plot of it is a tight thriller, but I'm really trying to get at something about like Clarence is someone who the protagonist who he almost like he kind of does this thing every once in a while, which is like a combination of like my kind of OCD yapping that I do, speaking in tongues and like drug talk. Like he'll repeat phrases a lot. He'll say things that sound like they're from the Bible. Like
I
it
really
he
like
has
that.
a way of speaking that's very unique.
So, oh my gosh, yeah. So, well, I was thinking, like, you mentioned that you like to, or maybe whether it's your intention or not, like your plays end up being very political. Is there a reason for that, or there's certain themes like you're very important to you?
I don't think so. I think everything I write is from here. I can't do like irony and I can't make a top-down political statement. It's all deeply me. I'm Clarence and I am Rena from Everyone in New York is Beautiful. That's just me. There's many different things about us, but my soul is with those characters. I think I believe in theater as something that's got to be vital and got to be important, and a lot of that deals with political realities. I will say though, Everyone in New York is Beautiful has a lot of talk about politics. The characters are a little more well-to-do, a little more cool. They're kind of talking about like, different leftist drama and polyamory and infighting. They have a lot of takes on politics. You know what I mean? These characters do not talk about that. It's almost like, I purposely, I maybe I did, I don't know, but it almost you would almost read it as me like purposely shutting that off. These characters are like very much living these political realities, and that just coming from something deep in here. It's not. Everyone in New York is Beautiful. I was definitely like trying to represent the politics of certain types of people, and just do that in a way that was accurate and felt
And
true
that
to
also
that
keeps
type.
it simple as well, 'cause it's just like, you're not like pulling and like curating all these like other things out that are like, outside of your own experience necessarily. It's like it really just comes from like very clear that it's your point of view, which is really important to like have a very coherent like point of view. We can
I
all
mean,
like tell there's a point of view,
I try to put like warts and all of me into the plays and make it like so me. I mean, I don't think you're gonna find like a good point that I agree with in one of my plays, and that I take as like maybe my favorite thing about my writing is that I'm really there's no character who is like my mouthpiece that is right. I mean, in Crisis, Clarence is the most despicable character in that play, maybe the most despicable character I've ever written. Rena is almost the villain of everyone in New York is beautiful. You know what I mean? I tried to do a like, oh, what's the fucking character from? It begins with an M. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Where it's like she's the main character, but she's
Oh,
sort of the
Martha, I
antagonist, you
think.
know? Martha, yeah.
Yeah.
I was like doing that kind of like, yeah, like monster protagonist, or like, is her name Daphna from Bad Jews? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a real character and a half. And I just want to, I don't know. I want to. I'm really trying to. Really trying to get at something there. I mean, something about it with Crisis, it's not, yeah, like it's not political in that they're like, oh no, what if Donald Trump gets elected again? It's political in that like a queer person, like, you know, is screaming at another queer person who's like okay, I just slept with my ex, and you know, like this is
It's
from
like
Clarence's
the
perspective.
interpersonal
Yeah,
politics.
I just slept with my ex who's an addict and who considers me a toxic person, and you are coming at me for that. You're mad at me about it, and I'm like, well, it was her. She hit me up, and then the
That's
guy's
a
like, well, you know
I think
what?
that's something a lot of people can relate
Yeah,
to.
it's like, you know what? This is your responsibility. And then Clarence comes back. Well, you know what, man? Like, what the fuck? Like, you're the one who's clean now, yeah. But that's because you cleaned up by going to the army. You still have your anarchy tattoo. What the fuck? You've given up everything. You sold the fuck out, man. And Rat's coming back like, what part of you thinks that queerness and punk rockness is being an addict? You know what I mean? Like, it's like this kind of politics. You know what I mean? Like, it deeply like how you relate to the world. It's not like it's how we live politics, not as much. And
That's
also
like,
like the fact that this guy steals $10,000. I don't even say a motivation for it. I just show you how he lives. You know what I mean? Like it, yeah. Like it's just like, yeah. You know, like if you, yeah. Like maybe I don't know if you show this play to someone living in, you know, the villages in Florida, they might. Oh, why did he steal the money? Why the fuck would, you know? I mean, I get why you shouldn't because it's your ex. But you find $10,000 and you're this addict guy who's really fucking
It
struggling.
makes
You might take
sense,
that money.
yeah.
Yeah. Like yeah.
I really like
Yeah.
how you mentioned like these themes of like queerness, God, and yapping. Because
Yeah.
my grandfather, who just visited over the weekend, he's a minister and a huge thing, a Presbyterian
Nice.
minister, and a huge thing in our family is that like we are y like he just will talk your head off forever, and you'll just be staring at him to the point where it's like, when is the story
That's
gonna
awesome.
end? Like, why the yapping? Why the over-explaining every single piece and person,
Yeah.
everybody's backstory, that I just to the point where it's like, what's the point of like the story? Like he like that is like a huge thing with our family. And like my mom's a journalist, and then her sister is a DEI consultant. So a lot
Awesome.
of it, and now I'm a podcaster. That's the third generation. So
Yeah.
it's like these themes of like kind of like being someone who like yaps, but like there's a lot, like there's so much substance. And I think if you're someone who is just like, I have a lot to say, that just cannot be, it cannot be denied. Like you can't you cannot be, I
Yes.
cannot be silenced, you know?
Yeah, and I will tell you that both I think it's fun, but it's like frustrating. But yeah, both Clarence and Rena are absolutely that. Like they steamroll and they talk too much.
Yeah, and it's really hard like to be like that kind of character. Like that kind of character is like really rooted in sort of like I know I have so many words and I have so many choices as to like how I want to engage politically in this situation. I just want to use them all at the same time and like steamroll the other person, and then when it comes back to me, it's like, oh no, I just like used all of my good lines, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that is, I hope Emma hears that, my director for Everyone in New York is Beautiful, because I think I used all my good lines is a really good encapsulation of what I'm trying to do with Rena. And everyone in New York is beautiful. I mean, she's someone who really, like, desperately needs to take a stand on things, even as she's changing, and even as it's not what she believes anymore. And that's sort of the sadness of that play, is someone wrote that, like, yeah, like, by the time characters figure out where they stand, their circumstances have already shifted, and then they need to figure out another way to articulate that new thing. The characters are deeply in transition during that play. There's one character who's quite literally trans and coming out throughout the course of that play. But there's other characters who, like, like Rena's podcast takes off throughout the course of the play. Rico thinks that he's into polyamory, and then maybe not, and then maybe, yeah, Jesse is bicurious, trying to be bi, like, all four of those characters, it's actually quite less conventionally plotted than Crisis. Because Crisis, I think I'm doing more radical things with language, because it's like a thriller where, like, imagine True Romance, but if Christian Slater started talking like a Beckett character, you know what I mean? Like, every once in a while. It's sort of what Crisis is like. If Christian Slater was a trans guy, and then he had like a paid long monologue that's sort of like Sam Beckett, is sort of what that's like. But it's still structured like a thriller. Everyone in New York is Beautiful was like all four of the characters' lives really overlapping and intersecting, in a way that's frustrating, but hopefully beautiful. And yeah, I think if there's something unique about that play, because really it's just sort of like a sexy rom-com hangout comedy, because I love hangout comedies. Clerks is one of my favorite movies of all time. If there's something unique about it, it's that all four of the characters are discovering things about themselves the whole time. And what it cuts off, but it does, like, kind of like a Hemingway thing, like, it ends and it's not over. You know what I mean? Like, they still, all of them, have a lot to figure out.
Like
I
they
don't really
all have a
wrap up
very
any of it.
well-deserved like character arc, but it's not
Yeah,
a full like
completely.
resolve at the end,
Someone once said that the place that Rena ends up in the end is, I hope she can change, because I think she sees it now. But it's not I've changed, and it's not even I'm going to change. It's like I see a kernel of it, and maybe that's enough. And it and it and it and it it kind of celebrates that little moment, which is something that I do, because that
I was in
crisis,
this play once
yeah.
where it's like I had one of those lines where it was like this like really not corny but just very like extreme in your face like this is the end of the play kind of line, and then the lights went down, and that's kind of the best because at the very least like you're telling the audience that there's been a shift and there's been an understanding in
Yes.
something, but then with that there's also like a loss. Like once you kind of come to some kind of conviction, there are things that are kind of die along with that. So
No,
definitely.
completely.
And I think also politics, like in terms of like, interpersonal politics is a really important thing that we don't really think about every day because we hold our like the characters in our lives to such high standards and expect everybody to be like as so consistent in their personal politics when it's just not how it works. But I think that is like how drama is written, really.
Yeah, and there's something I've learned. How much do I want to say? Something
Don't
I've learned
use all
with
of your good lines.
I know. Well, something I've learned with the group of people I've been surrounding myself lately is that different groups of people, politicized groups of people, whatever, like, show up for each other in different kinds of ways. And I think that's really started to bake its way into my work,
I
because
like that.
I've seen the way, the really beautiful way. I have a friend group now that's just everyone's, they're all trans. And the degree of empathy and care and humor, and almost like a punk rock kind of like ribbing of each other, like, but with this deep, deep care that I didn't feel in, like, my high school group of boys. It's unparalleled, and I think there's something deeply inherent in Crisis that revolves around that. These characters, three of these characters, cannot let each other go. Not just because they have deep loves for each other, but because just like their queerness and their identity and their interpersonal relationship is so tied up, and I think they're afraid of what it means if they lose each other. So yeah, it's the political tied to the personal. But hey, I'm also working on a play now. Like the next one, God knows when it'll be finished, is about a woman who decides that the reason that there are a lot of she sees that okay, there used to be more celebrity shootings. Now there's a lot of school shootings, mass shootings. I think that's probably correlated. So what I could do, my contribution to society, is I'm going to go online and start convincing would-be school shooters, because you're not going to stop them. It's too late to stop them. Just
They've
convince them to
made the
shoot a celebrity instead of
decision.
just convince them to shoot a celebrity instead of 20 kids, because that's like you weigh it out. It's probably better. So like it's about that. So there's this like, and then it's kind of a look, and then it's that. It's her trying to do that, and then also an atrocity exhibition of some of the worst moments of the 20th century involving gun violence, but I rewrite them with contemporary language. So I have Dylan and Eric like quoting memes to each other, like saying that like Mark David Chapman was like, like totally Chad Maxing by shooting Ronald Reagan. I don't know what I'm trying to do with that one,
No,
but
I it totally
I've
makes sense,
yeah.
actually. It makes complete sense. And like, yeah,
Right?
I think, and especially like with the any kind of like those like meme references, it's like it's not even like I feel like language, like talking about memes, like it's extended and exceeded the meme definition. To me, like memes are now just like language. Like, and I think that's pretty much like what the origin of the meme is. It's mimetic, it's just language.
Yeah, no, that's literally what Richard Dawkins yeah, I think meant when he called it. It's literally right, it's something that it's a cultural artifact that produces it's reproduces like a gene. So like
Just
Kilroy Was Here was a meme
yeah.
before the internet.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I
Yeah, that
completely forgot about that guy.
exactly. It's something that's completely socially reproduced. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and so I think that kind of mimetic this idea, this like weirdly like Zizekian idea that like the present rewrites the past. So somehow we look, if you look at Dylan and Eric, like, yeah, I look at pictures of those guys and I see Reddit users, even though that didn't exist. You know what I mean? So, like, if you have them speak like that, like, how uncanny that might be. Or if you have, like, I don't know, like, yeah, I mean,
And
I'm
it
just like,
also kind
that
of
just
like helps like
interesting.
as sort of, reprocessing like history and just being in touch with like cultural history. It kind of almost is a great tool to help you understand people's like perspectives and motivations.
And I want to take like interesting particular moments, because again, A plot is this woman trying to do this crazy task of like, and then also like figuring out the politics of, okay, well, I probably can't convince him to shoot Donald Trump because he probably likes Donald Trump, and I can't convince him that like that's the reason that, oh, women are, you know what I mean? Like, because he's on your side. But I'm not gonna have him kill like Kimberly Crenshaw, you know what I mean? So I gotta like, okay, who, like Harry Styles? He's a white dude, but like, I feel like you could convince him that like, oh, after One Direction came out, women, you know what I mean? Like, her doing that math of like, what's the best, like, I
What's
can
the
do it, but
best
it
way
caused
to
all these
Chad
damage.
Max for
Like, yeah,
the
is it
for
like,
this?
is it Willem Dafoe? You know what I mean? Like, I think it'd just be really funny to see what celebrity she decides that she's going to convince this guy. But I'm also interested in like very interesting moments of gun violence in history. Like, yeah, like Dylan and Eric, like it's literally Dylan and Eric like in the basement where they were writing the manifest, because that just is so Reddit coded to me. Like, but like, what about, I'm not just gonna like grab every big shooting though. What about like fucking American sniper Chris Kyle on the gun range right before he got shot by the other veteran who felt excluded by him, and fucking shoots him. This guy he's taken out to a gun range. Like, isn't that I feel like that moment should be in a play because that's
Yeah,
so,
has to
you represented
be.
America, you represented, not being traumatized and actually being happy that you killed all these people, being part of one of the like fucking least moral wars we've ever been involved in, and being so proud of it. And you're doing a little bit of genuine work. I mean, you're helping out veterans, and this guy fucking shoots you, and you die just in your home country, like this terrible death. And I don't really feel bad for you because you're not a good person, but like, what the f like, it's like biblical, you know what I mean? Like, it's so it biblical in the sense of like, you can't really get a moral from it, but it seems
But it's
like something you should
prophetic
study,
almost.
right? Like, it feels like the like the prodigal son or the binding of Isaac, like one of those ones that like, you just, how the fuck do I reconcile with the fact that you're supposed to celebrate the sinner more than the good person, even though the sinner, you're not supposed to sin. You know what I mean? It's like one of those,
Yeah, one of those like very conflicting internally where it's
Which
like
is, if
it
I
makes you
understand
angry.
religion, that is, I'm starting to maybe understand myself as religious now, but if I am, it's in that very contradictory and unknowable, very like Kierkegaardian, sense of like, faith for faith's sake almost. And
Yeah, and it's what makes it very difficult too, because it's kind of like that same thing that phenomenon that happens in a play where it's like, okay, here's this one idea, it's come to resolve to this one conclusion and conviction, but with that there's just like all of this other stuff that is kind of left behind and like has to die. So
I got no answers, but my aim is true. It's all dialectics, baby.
Yeah, paths are many, destination is one. Yeah,
Exactly.
definitely. Well, we're kind of coming up on time, but yeah, thank you. Let's plug away.
Plug away.
What is your Instagram?
So my Instagram is at Christian fucking Flynn. And game piece is at the sleight of hand. Oh wait, actually, I figured it's at sleight of hand ensemble. You could get tickets to game piece in the link tree in my bio, or the it's at sleight of hand ensemble at in the sleight of hand bio. You can also check out at the Spade NYC, but that's not what we're here to plug.
Cool. Excellent. Well, and then yeah, game pieces will be
This Saturday.
this Saturday. Excellent. Perfect. Well, yay, I'm excited. Christian, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Yes, of course. And yes, I will see you on the flip side, and everybody follow Christian and go see Game Piece and end scene.